First up today, all that ruckus surrounding the Kansas City School District. Last week, the district sued the state to try to get provisional accreditation and protect the district from the mounting threat of a student transfer law. In another development, Education Commissioner Chris Nicastro is under fire over a bid process for consultants in connection with a long-range planning process for the unaccredited district. What does it all mean for a district that seems to be within reach of stability for the first time in decades? With us, Eric Leonard West is president of the Kansas City School Board. Eric, welcome back. So good to have you.
Always good to be here, Steve.
Jennifer Wolfsey is a member of the Kansas City Public Schools District Advisory Committee. Jennifer, nice to have you, too.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, Eric, there's a lot of turmoil around this district right now. How are you managing it?
Actually loving a lot of the core things about where the Kansas City Public Schools are right now. Obviously, just a month or so ago, we extended Superintendent Green a new 5-year contract. Add that to the years that he's already been here, and we're on pace to have the longest-serving superintendent since his 60s.
How important is that? How significant is that?
Well, stability in the classroom, which is where achievement actually happens, always hinges on stability throughout the administration and governance. And by ensuring a measure of stability elsewhere in the district, we secure for our scholars the best chance of achievement in the classroom.
You know, Jennifer, people, patrons of this district have been clamoring for that word stability for years. How confident are you that it's within grasp right now?
Very confident. I actually have been a parent with children. I have a fifth grader and a first grader, and I've been around when there wasn't much stability. And in the last 5 years, we've seen some significant stability come back, starting with just a board that's more stable that then leads to a more stable superintendent. And you actually can start to feel it in the classroom.
I was going to say this notion that Eric just threw out, that if you have a stable administration, you have more stable teachers, you have more stable students who are in a better learning environment. Do you buy that? Is that true?
I do. I think what it helps is when you have stability, you can focus and you can deselect the things that don't get you where you need to be and focus singularly on the things that will get you where you need to be. Dr. Green and his staff have done an excellent job of that since February of 2012, really deselecting things that aren't focused completely on moving the needle on student achievement and getting teachers and students to focus in where they need to.
Well, Eric Leonard West, we're talking here about stability, and yet the district filed a lawsuit last week, and there are calls by a whole cadre of Democratic lawmakers calling for the state education commissioner, Chris Nicastro, to resign. That's not exactly stability.
No. My greatest interest is how do we ensure that our scholars have the most effective learning environment possible? And a lot of these other issues that you describe are not issues that directly impact the achievement of scholars. And so as a board, we have intentionally avoided those issues and have avoided participation. And we've really wanted to focus in on what matters most for our children. However, with the Supreme Court's decision regarding transfers, it puts the entire district at risk in a way that, as a board, we simply could no longer remain silent on. And so while we've avoided involving ourselves in this ongoing debacle, it has brought itself to our scholars' doorstep. And as a board, we're obligated to respond.
So you sued. I'm wondering, what do you hope to achieve here? What's the objective?
Our scholars have earned provisional accreditation. No one questions that. The data is very clear.
Well, Chris Nicastro, the education commissioner, questions it, Eric.
No, there is no question that it has been earned. There is now only a question of whether or not it will be conferred. According to the state's standards, you have to score at least 70 points to be eligible. On the last round of state's own evaluation, we scored 84. There is no question about whether it's been earned. Now the only question is whether and when it will be conferred.
When is the next time you'll get a set of test scores to sort of answer Chris Nicastro's concern, which is sort of a sense of a pattern developing here? It's not just based on 1 year, she points out. It's based on multi-years.
There's nothing in the law or statute or anything that supports that as an argument. In fact, if we were going to maintain that as an argument, we would have pulled it out when St. Louis was granted their provisional accreditation after 2 years of growth. And so what we're really dealing with is a situation where previously, though we wanted it and we wanted it badly, it it was not an argument that we could make as a board that it was harming our children not to have had it conferred. But not conferring it at this point, in addition to the transfer law, which has been upheld, does create tangible harm for our scholars. And because of that, we have to stand up to protect their educational well-being.
I hear your point that there's nothing in the law that says it has to be multiple years. But again, Chris DeCastro, Eric, is saying this is a fluke, or it could be a fluke, I should say. You had 1 year of good test scores. We need to see multiple years, and then let's have a conversation. When will you have another set of test scores to show her?
Well, right. If we'd only had 1 year of test scores, then maybe you could argue that. But actually, we've had back-to-back years of solid test scores, a multi-year trend that is growing. The next time we'll see test scores coming out will be August. And our belief, just as it's been in the past 2 years when we have accurately predicted it months in advance, well, we can accurately predict a lot of it in advance right now. We know that we will continue to improve as a district. However, that hinges on being able to maintain a measure of stability in the short term.
And this is important, the status of the district, because if you remain unaccredited, that means this very controversial student transfer law remains in effect, which means that students in your district can transfer to accredited districts and have your district not only pay for their tuition, but also pay for their transportation. Those could become unholy costs and a burden on your district that I'm sure you don't want to deal with.
Well, first, it's important for people to understand the issue. Right now, taking Normandy School District on the St. Louis side, for example, because they're going through this very thing, they receive around $9,000 or so dollars per year from the state. They are required to pay $21,000 per child per year to the districts they're going around, sending out to. So obviously the math doesn't make sense. However, the situation that's unfurling itself there is what actually terrifies us. There's very little concern amongst the board or the administration, you know, that our scholars and our families are going to leave. There are plenty of options, plenty of choices in Kansas City Public Schools, whether between neighborhood schools, charter schools, district schools, signature schools. So if parents wanted to leave, they could already leave. That's choice isn't the question. Mm-hmm. Our fear is that of the 40,000 school-aged children living within the boundaries of Kansas City Public Schools, we serve less than 17,000 of them. Our fear is not that our 17,000 will leave. Our fear is what's happened in Normandy, where children who never even attended the public schools have opted to take the transfer to the suburban schools, but the public schools still have to foot the bill for that. And so even if none of their children had left, they'd still be in a position to be bankrupt because of children who moved into Normandy for the express purpose of being able to attend suburban schools.
So even like a parent who now has a child that they have opted not to send to your district schools, they're sending to a private school, they're footing the bill. Under this law, suddenly the district would have to foot the bill for that student continuing to attend a private school.
That's correct. If parent is dissatisfied with the charter school they're in, or parent is dissatisfied with the private school they're in, if either of those parents take advantage of this, the Kansas City Public Schools still has to foot the bill for that, even though those children were not in our classroom. And so if all of our children stay, in a time when we are experiencing stability and the actual growth and achievement of our scholars, stability that we've not known for years, that this transfer law, coupled with the unwillingness to grant the provisional accreditation that has been earned, will create an instability that will damage the educational well-being of our scholars.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the Kansas City School District and some big issues now confronting that district. What do you make of the Kansas City School Board's decision to sue the state over its lack of accreditation? Is there just too much chaos inside the district right now? What do you want to see happen next? Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Jennifer Wolsey, again, you're a member of the Kansas City Public Schools District Advisory Committee. What Eric just said is so interesting to me. I mean, here we are talking about this notion that stability is being achieved, is within reach, depending on how you want to look at it. And yet there's this turmoil coming at the district from outside the district all of a sudden. It seems like the district just can't win, or how do you see it?
I see it very differently. It's really frustrating as a parent who actually has children in these schools. I go in almost 10 times a week into my school, you know, picking up and dropping off. And so I know that the schools themselves are actually delivering on the promise of public education. I see it every day.
You feel it every day for your own kids.
I do. And I want to make sure people understand it's not just me. I confer and have relationships with many parents throughout the district, some in other signature schools and some in neighborhood schools. And by and large, most of us know readily it's not a perfect world. We're not, you know, we know that. But we have seen actual changes over the last 5 years and then more recently in the last 2 years under Dr. Green's leadership, us go from what kind of that 40-year-old a script of it's dysfunctional, it needs to be blown up. I'm sorry, but every time I walk into a school, not just mine but others, I do not feel that same way. I actually see students engaged in learning. I see them creating great relationships with their teachers where those teachers are actually able to do some real instruction.
Is that because of Dr. Green, again, this two-year superintendent we've had here? I mean, how much credit does he deserve? How do you size it up?
To me, it's kind of like a perfect storm, if you will. It can't just be one thing. We had a foundation laid where we actually went through a very difficult process. We had a board that finally started to stop managing and move towards policy governance under Eric's leadership. And then as that stabilized, we were able to go through the more difficult right-sizing process, which allowed us to get our financial and operational house in order so that once those things were stabilized, we could actually do the hard work of trying to turn around academic achievement, doing the due diligence necessary there to start to turn things around and really focus. We did have Dr. Covington leave at the beginning of our, I think it was 11-12 school year, and we're fortunate enough to bring on Dr. Green. He has undeniably brought on a set of leaders that have allowed our district to focus singularly how everything moves student achievement.
And it's such a huge issue for
the
district.
It is. One of the other things I want to make sure people understand is it wasn't just he alone and his cabinet. I don't think a lot of people realize that there was a process that DESE themselves put together when we became unaccredited.
The Department of Education and secondary education, right.
And the process is called the Regional School Improvement Team process. A lot of us refer to it as RSIT. And what it is it's a monthly meeting between the DESE advisors put in charge of watching how our school district is going to turn itself mm-hmm. from unaccredited to full accredited. Dr. Green and his staff put together a plan. Every month, DESE advisors sit down in that process with Dr. Green's staff, and data is presented about how we're moving along in that process. It is a very pointed Q&A from the DESE advisors to Dr. Green's cabinet. And what it has allowed to happen, just for the layperson so they understand, it has actually allowed this system, this public school system, to change itself to deliver academic progress over the last 2 years.
And so your message to parents who might be listening out there who might become patrons of the district would be, hey, come take a look. It's
Absolutely.
A different ballgame today.
Absolutely.
And yet, Eric Leonard West, we're sitting here talking about this system that the State Education Department has put our district through. Now there's talk about another long-term planning process that the Education Commissioner, Chris Nicastro, is now under fire for. If this first process worked, why not the second process that she's looking at?
Well, the first process continues to work, and you know, we're excited to continue our good faith collaboration with the State Department of Education. It's worked for 2 years, and we want to see that continue even after we're granted accreditation. We still see the value of that and want that to continue. Some of what they're looking at with this long-term plan are looking at large questions of how do you create the conditions, for scholar achievement to thrive in classrooms. And, mm-hmm. and it's absolutely the right conversation to be having. And so I completely agree with the questions that are being posed. In fact, the very organization that they're looking at, board members, including myself, reached out to them nearly 3 years ago to have that conversation. And some of the changes, some of the reforms that have been implemented over the past 3 years are a direct result of those conversations with that organization. So the questions that they're asking and the things that they want to see happen in our classrooms and for our scholars are absolutely on track. What's at question is the process by which you go through that. Mm-hmm. Do you completely ignore the wisdom, you know, of your parents, you know, and the community leaders who have the greatest investment in what's happening in these classrooms and the welfare of these children? Then we would argue no, that that's not the best practice, that, that there's no way that you get from where we've been to where we want to be by ignoring and discounting the wisdom available in our communities.
You know, Eric, this process that you're talking about here that Krystyna Castro is now talking about publicly, apparently this was secret for a while, and it just burst onto the scene a week or so ago when Joe Robertson from The Star wrote some great stories about all of this and brought it into the light. Did you know that the State Department of Education was looking at all this? How caught off guard were you by what Joe had to report?
I think what most of us didn't know is just how long the plan has already been written.
Meaning how long it had been in the works and how long the planning process had been going on without your knowledge?
It has certainly been in the works and discussed. But what comes out in the emails that have been revealed, this what you describe as kind of the secretive process, is that so much of this plan really, as a practical matter, feels like it's already been written, in that decisions were already made. And in fact, the nature of our lawsuit is that we feel like we did not have a transparent and an accountable process for determining whether or not the Kansas City Public Schools should be accredited, specifically because there was already this secretive process in play. Mm-hmm. And so all we're really asking for is just a fair and impartial hearing of the facts to really evaluate to what extent has the Kansas City Public Schools truly engaged in reform over the past several years, reform that is both meaningful right now for our scholars, but sustainable for the long-term growth.
So if I hear you correctly, Eric, you're saying you were aware that this process was underway. You just didn't know the extent to which certain decisions had been already made.
Oh, well, we didn't even know the process was underway until into the fall, when clearly it had been initiated back in the spring.
So you did know about it before the stories hit, but you didn't know much detail of what was going on.
Clearly not the level of detail and the level of involvement of, you know, local players here in Kansas City. I mean, it's all coming forward, and as we go into this lawsuit, there will be additional discovery where whatever there is to be known will be available in a transparent and accountable manner.
Jennifer Wolsey, what did you make of these stories, this revelation that this process had been ongoing for quite a while? How did it hit you?
It was frustrating, mainly because I am aware of the other process that DESE had given us and that we had been working diligently. It felt like there was – somebody gave me the analogy. It's as if – we were in couples counseling and we're doing all the due diligence to find out that one of the other players had actually filed for a divorce. And
it was that kind of thing.
It was like a punch to the gut. We all knew that C-Trust had been selected. You know, that was public knowledge back in, I think it was September. At that time, I'd actually written a letter to Dr. Nicastro stating I was slightly disappointed. But you know, as parents, we actually, you know, we're very supportive of a study to study the challenges that maybe schools that are unaccredited have. That mm-hmm. we have no problem with. But I think it's really how we now have discovered that some of these communications actually began back in April between the commissioner and some of the funders here in Kansas City.
So there was a period of secrecy there that you're not comfortable with, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, if I could, it's the lack of maybe even who's funding it is concerning.
Like a trust?
The transparency. Well, the study themselves are funded by Kauffman Family Foundation and Hall Family Foundation.
Yeah, I'm wondering
if
you sense a lack of trust between the State Department of Education and your district and the parents involved there.
Yeah, it just it concerns me. I am a little concerned that you have someone funding something that may have another motive. Perhaps, you know, they are a charter operator in our school, in our school boundaries. And so it casts a shadow of doubt over any of the outcomes that might come from the study.
And I'm guessing you might feel that the district deserves better at this point, given the progress that's been made.
Well, the progress and the process that actually has been shown to work. In some of the research that I've done, just learning about what C-Trust typically will recommend, is some of the reforms that they might come up with tend to not be evidence-based. And as a parent with children actually in the schools, I personally would feel more comfortable staying with the current course of action that has been proven to work to improve achievement for 2 years versus something that would not be evidence-based.
Something new, and that would add to a certain level of uncertainty here.
It would. Even some of the research I've done has shown that some of the recommendations tend to lead to a widening of the achievement gap within class and race. So that would be a huge concern to me.
Again, we're talking about the Kansas City, Missouri School District. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to some calls here. And Tom from Lee Summit. Tom, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Good morning.
There, Tom?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I had a question. There was a comment earlier about the students that are currently attending a private school that may choose to transfer to a suburban school, and the school district was going to have to pay for that transfer. So I understand that part, and that makes sense. However, my question was, currently, if I have a child at a private school, doesn't this public school district actually receive the funds that they would have received had my child gone to the public school? So the point that I'm driving at here is, so KCMO today receives funding for every child that is currently attending a private school, but doesn't incur any of the cost.
Is that right, Eric?
Partially. So it depends on where the funds are coming from, because public education is paid by a combination of state, local, federal dollars. What's important for Tom to know is that the state and federal dollars, the state dollars, which are mostly what's being discussed with the transfer policy, those are apportioned out on a per pupil basis. And so the number of scholars that we serve is multiplied by whatever our allocation is, and that's what gets us our state allocation. And similarly, our federal allocations are tend to be on a per pupil basis.
So the private schools would not be counted in that per pupil count you just referred to, Eric.
That's correct.
Yeah. Does that help, Tom?
Okay. It does. And so I had a misunderstanding there.
Yeah. All right, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You know, Eric Leonard West, we're sitting here talking about Krystyna Castro. She's so much in the news these days, given this plan for more reform of the Kansas City, Missouri School District. What kind of relationship do you have with her right now?
Well, the best relationship that there's been between the Kansas City Public Schools and the Department of Education has been through this collaboration we've had for 2 years through this school improvement team process that DESE put in place. And as I mentioned before, this is absolutely a relationship that has made a difference for the scholars in our district and that we want to see continued.
This is on the plus side, you're saying?
Absolutely. If in so much as the commissioner and the state board want to see that relationship continue, so do we, because we see that it's made a difference. Is it a little bit cumbersome? Is it invasive? Certainly, but it's been cumbersome and invasive in a way that served children, and so for that reason, we honor it and want to see it sustained.
Some lawmakers are suggesting she's lost the credibility to hold the position of education commissioner. Do you share that view?
I don't really have a perspective on that. Our lawsuit simply says we want a fair judicial evaluation of the facts available in terms of determining the accreditation of the Kansas City Public Schools.
Jennifer, what's your 2 cents on that front?
I would expect and want my commissioner to be somebody that would be open to a balanced point of view. One of my main concerns is, does she still have the ability? Because in reading the Sunshine documents, I tend to think that only one point of view, one side of an equation is being presented. And as a parent with children in these schools, I would hope that the Commissioner of Education in the state of Missouri would recognize and appreciate that there's a 360-degree view of every single issue.
How does the school board regard her, Eric? Do you have any sense of that? your colleagues?
No, we've not had the privilege of visiting with her at some time, though we certainly extend the invitation, you know, welcome a visit from our commissioner at any time, though we certainly understand that she's quite busy.
Let's go to, let's go to Leslie from Kansas City, Missouri. Leslie, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to know if the KCPS had looked at the concept of community schools that provide wraparound services to students and families, since poverty has such a negative impact in the classroom. I was curious to see if they looked at that concept to help move the needle.
Community schools, Eric Leonard West.
Leslie's right on point. This fall, we opened up Woodland Early Learning Center, which exactly speaks to the promise of community schools. What it is a center for 3- and 4-year-olds, but it has all of the other community services and public services available to families all in that same building, so that moms and dads don't have to run all around town to try to meet the important needs of their family. We've certainly rolled that out in that regard. We'd like to roll that out increasingly in some of our other buildings. In fact, Dr. Green will be talking about that in the spring as we move closer and closer to next year, about how do we invite more community partners to actually office inside of some of our buildings. The other aspect of that is having a neighborhood component where children are not being bused an hour away to go to school, but they go to school in the same general proximity, so that it's easier for those neighborhood services to really be supportive.
All right. Leslie, thank you. Let's go to Bob from Fairway. Bob, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi. Well, it seems like that finally, when there's a financial penalty that the school district's going to have to pay, that, you know, there might be some real action that happens. This has been going on for years and years and years. And I understand that the people you've invited are talking about how it's going to get better. But my main comment was how the mayor, Sly James, came out and said, well, we're going to fight this in court. That was exactly the wrong kind of response. And it's also you would normally think that a person in authority would say, oh, well, this is serious. We'll go bankrupt here if this happens. We'll really have to make change. Instead, what they said is, well, we'll just start another court case over this and we're going to fight it. And to me, that just shows how stubborn and childish that people can be when they're faced with these kinds of decisions they got to make.
Bob, thank you. Let's have Eric respond.
I absolutely share Bob's frustration. The last thing that the board and I wanted to do was find ourselves in litigation over this. It really is ridiculous because it does not serve the best interest of our scholars to be in litigation of this nature. Unfortunately, the circumstances are such that it is either stand silently by and watch our children be harmed unnecessarily, or to take arms against a sea of trouble by opposing in them.
You know, Eric, just a final point here before we end this segment. There is a lot of talk in the General Assembly that meets again in January about changing the student transfer law that you're so concerned about and how it might impact your school district. How confident are you that lawmakers this next year will finally be able to alter this law that might be more satisfying to you? Or are you holding your breath or not, which I guess is what I'm asking?
The wisdom of the legislatures, certainly in my prayers.
Yeah, okay. Let's end it right there. I want to thank Eric Leonard West. He's president of the Kansas City, Missouri School Board. And Jennifer Wolsey, who's a member of the Kansas City Public School District Advisory Committee. Thanks to you both for the good update. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And sorry about the strep throat today.
That's all right. Well,